this is Jim Brown with a preliminary audio-only description of our new Sea Clipper 20 trimaran, what we call the amphibious sailing campsite. Here's a very brief rundown of the basic features of the boat, and I'll follow with a little elaboration on each of these features. This craft is designed to be owner-built, either from a kit or from scratch, with mostly lumberyard materials. She has extremely simple construction by the so-called panel method of flat sheet plywood and epoxy, and a little lumber. She has very straightforward flat side and flat bottom construction. The bottom is extremely robust for easy trailering, even on a flatbed trailer, and for easy beaching, even on rocky beaches, and surf landings, even on rocky beaches. She can be rigged with any of several very commonly available beach cat rigs and sail plans. She can also utilize other endemic monohull rigs that are commonly available in class designs. She has swing wing cross beams for easy trailering and fitting into a berth and fitting on into a campground site. She has about an 8-foot square tenting site, a rigid platform, not on trampolines, a rigid plywood platform with a generous footwell. And the tenting site, the 8-foot square platform, is not disturbed by folding, so that the boat can be camped aboard, whether she's in a campground or in an anchorage or in a berth. She's rigged with traditional tiller steering, utilizing a hiking stick so that the crew can hike out. But she can also be steered in the manner of the Windrider by sitting down inside either of two cockpits with foot pedal steering to leave both hands free for tending the sheets. She'll carry four adults on day sailing expeditions, but she carries two adults, or one adult and two dogs or whatever, for even extensive liveaboard camping expeditions. She's capable of extended coastal expeditions. The design of this boat was conceived in 2002 by me, and she was not released at that time because she was thought to be a step backwards. But now, with the changing economic conditions, it appears that she may even be ahead of her time. A recent survey of the marine industry reveals a lot of pent-up demand for the waterborne experience. But the current economic conditions are forcing down both the costs and the responsibilities of boat ownership. Vessel size is being forced down to anything that'll fit onto a trailer, and owner building is flourishing, if only in garage-sized projects. But at the same time, sailors want to retain a high degree of the high performance and the extremely able seakeeping qualities that have been demonstrated by contemporary multi-hulls. Most of the small contemporary multi-hulls, production boats at least, are so exorbitantly costly. And still, sailors want to include at least minimal accommodations for weekend and even coastal cruising and even hard adventure expeditions. The original Sea Clipper was a 28-footer that I designed in the 1970s, and the series has been expanded considerably by John Marples and runs from 10 feet to 40 feet. So the Sea Clipper 20 is really nothing new. The breakthrough in this design, the really different thing about her, is her swing wing cross beams. Most swing wing designs are very mechanistic. They depend on a production builder who can invest in exotic jigs and fixtures in order to assure perfect alignment of the axes for swinging both cross beams without binding. But this is a really daunting challenge for owner builders. Now, this boat utilizes what we call leaf spring cross beams, which are slightly flexible and will tolerate small misalignments in the axes because they can flex a bit. We have found that flexible cross beams are advantageous in our Windrider trimarans. There's nothing wrong with it. In fact, it may actually improve performance. But the flexibility is utilized here primarily to permit the swing wing geometry from binding, even when produced by amateur builders. And in addition, these leaf spring cross beams are built of solid 2x lumber, which greatly simplifies their fabrication. Building the cross beams in some multi-hulls, particularly folding trimarans, can be extremely tedious, requiring a whole lot of man hours and actually adding to the complexity of the entire project. It's almost like building another hull. Whereas these leaf spring cross beams are intended to dramatically reduce the complications, particularly of a folding trimaran. And furthermore, the means of attaching these cross beams to these hulls is so straightforward that it makes them easy to maintain or replace, and cross beams of several descriptions can be used. There are alternative means of connecting these three hulls if one does not wish to swing the wing. So all in all, we consider this crossbeam system to be appropriate, particularly for the times. And in fact, they may prove to be a significant advance. And now to the foils. The Sea Clipper 20 is designed to include deep centerboard and rudder. The centerboard is a swing centerboard that fits into a slot. It's deep and powerful, and the rudder also is deep and powerful, and both of these foils will kick up upon striking obstructions. The centerboard is a flat plate so that it can retract into a trunk that is so slim that the open part of the aperture is not a problem with drag when the board is in the down position. The rudder, however, has a fat foil configuration. It is subjected to much higher angles of attack, and so to prevent it from stalling, it has a legitimate foil. And the combination of these two is intended to achieve three factors. First of all, the boat should tack dependably, whether in zephyrs or in a steep chop. It should be very weatherly. It should climb to windward very efficiently, whether in light airs or in gales. And the boat is expected to be easily controlled when sailing downwind, even in big waves and surf riding conditions. The construction of the boat by this panel method can be described as follows. One starts by erecting a long workbench over sawhorses and 2x6 joists. That the table is 20 feet long and covered with 4x8 sheets of particle board. And this thing has to be roughly leveled up. And then the sides of the hulls are laid out from dimensions and cut from plywood. And the lumber trusswork that goes onto the inboard sides of the hull panels is fastened to the panels by screwing down through the lumber and through the hull panel and into the particle board. So it's very much like model airplane construction. The two hull sides with the chine log and the deck stringer and some internal stringers are all attached. And while the panel is lying flat on the bench, it can be completely sealed and treated permanently with epoxy on the inside. It can even be turned over and coated on the outside or fiberglassed if one wishes to fiberglass the entire boat. It may not be necessary, but these flat panels can be pre-finished, so to speak. That is, ready to go into the boat without a whole lot of additional work done to finish the boat. Now, with the two main hull side panels and the four float side panels all built and pre-finished, both sides stacked up against the shop wall, one can erect on the big bench only two frames in the hull at the point where the cross beams attach, and a stem and a transom. These four components are simply fastened down to the bench along a center line string, and then the pre-finished hull panels are wrapped around these two frames to the stem and the transom upside down. So now, with only a little bit of planing and fairing, one can install the bottom panels to all three hulls. The main hull bottom is intended to be built of two layers of quarter-inch plywood with their butts staggered, so that the bottom is a half an inch thick, very robust construction. After a bit of shaping, then the entire outside of the hull can be fiberglassed if the sides have not already been pre-fiberglassed. But at least the bottom should be fiberglassed and the chines heavily taped after shaping. This is not the so-called stitch and glue construction. There are chine logs so that the bottom can be simply screwed into the side panels. And then after shaping, the fiberglassing can proceed. And it's even recommended for some purposes that the bottom be further clad with a sheet of ultra-high molecular weight polyethylene. This is the plastic that is used in such places as ferry boat landings. And it would be possible now to literally drag the boat up a cliff or down the highway without a trailer. This stuff is chafe proof, and it would prepare the bottom for a very rugged service if indeed the owner was intending on making hard adventure expeditions. With the three hulls thus completed upside down, now the boat can be easily turned over and the deck applied. The shape is established by the hull panels bent around the frames. There's also an almost full length weather deck installed in the main hull at the height of the cockpit sole to reinforce the side panels of the boat full length. This is extremely robust and stiff construction, very resistant to global torsion. The simple metal brackets described in the plan are then fastened to the hull in order to mount the crossbeams, fastened to the main hull in order to mount the crossbeams, and then the crossbeams fastened into the float decks with a single fastener, a so-called Jesus bolt that goes down through the crossbeam and into the center of the float deck, which serves as the axes for the crossbeam to pivot on the float decks. Well, let's talk about economy a bit here. There are some decisions available to the builder as to what sort of materials and to what extent one wishes to finish the vessel make it yachty. Personally, I feel that if I were to build one of these boats for myself, a primary goal would be rock bottom economy. And I would really consider coating the insides of the hulls and all of the undersides of the deck panels and the bottom panels and so forth. All the inside of the boat would be coated with at least two coats of epoxy and nothing else. No paint, no nothing else. The outside of the hulls could be finished also without fiberglassing, particularly if one were to use the new Goujon Brothers G-Flex resin, and one could use really rusty cheap pine plywood if he were to take the trouble to apply this G-Flex carefully with a squeegee and push it into all of the imperfections in the plywood. And then at least two coats of G-Flex would be required on the decks. And then with a light sanding, paint could be applied or no paint could be applied if indeed the vessel was to be kept under cover, except when in use. Storage is when boats go to the devil from exposure to ultraviolet light. And with this vessel folded and the mast arranged in crutches at each end of the boat to elevate it slightly over the main hull, that would form a ridge pole over which one could now lay an inexpensive tarpaulin and tie it down around the boat so that the wind could not blow it off. So the storage of the vessel, if attention was paid to storage, to keep her covered all the time or else undercover of some kind, then the finishing could be dramatically reduced right down to rock bottom. This is the sort of boat that one might wish to really knock around, and so to make it nice and yachty is really inconsistent with the philosophy of the design. In selecting the plywood, one can use, as I mentioned, the cheapest pine or Moranti plywood and coat it carefully, or proceed with fiberglassing all of the exterior if indeed one wished to spend the money and the time to do that. Or, of course, one could buy good marine grade plywood. The Akume plywood commonly used today for owner boat building is a wonderful material, very lightweight. It's not as strong as the pine, but it's certainly strong enough, particularly if it's fiberglassed. But the difference in cost between the plywood order for these two boats would be by a factor of about four. That is, the Akume plywood would probably cost about four times as much as the lumberyard variety. And all of the wood in the boat could be the so-called pressure-treated material. That is, treated to last for 40 years of exposure underground. And this stuff is slightly toxic. It would require the builder to wear a dust mask during most of the construction to keep dust particles out of the lungs. But the material would be very long-lived. It's not fun to work with, like Akume. It's really pretty rasty stuff. But if you really wanted to keep the cost down, there'd be nothing wrong with using pressure-treated plywood, pine plywood, and or pressure-treated lumber. All the lumber in the boat could also be this so-called salt-treated stuff that is literally rot-proof for about 40 years. I know that many owner builders will be tempted to try to do the very best job they can and make the boat really quite fancy and good-looking. But that's entirely up to the individual. But this is the sort of boat that's really intended for a rugged service. And if you have a beautiful yacht, you're not very tempted to really use it hard. And I think that's a shame. Now, to the rig and sail plan, as mentioned before, this boat is intended for used masts, boom, and sails. It's actually it's been done on multi-hulls this size a lot to utilize the Hobie 16 mast, boom, and sails, or the Hobie 18, or even larger boats. If you want to turn your boat into a speed machine, you can put a G-Cat or a Hobie 21 rig on it or whatever, but the Hobie 16 rig will definitely drive the boat at flank speed. It's one of those things that is, the Beach Cat rigs are so very efficient because their masts rotate and the sails fit into a slot. It just becomes amazingly efficient. These full batten sails are just wonderful. But it, of course, it's also possible to use the traditional rigs and sail plans from more ordinary monohull vessels, and there are a lot of them around. It's easy to find that stuff used. Normally, it's easy to find that stuff used. The foot pedals for in-hull steering, that is sit-down armchair steering like we have in the Windrider trimarans, the foot pedal hardware for the steering would be purchased from a kayak manufacturer or dealer. They're quite available, but it's also quite possible to make your own foot pedal just with the loops of string that fit over your foot for steering these boats. All of that can be dramatically reduced if one wishes to do so. Now to the tent platform. This absence of trampolines is intentional. Trampolines are expensive. They're not very long-lived when stored. They're hard to deal with when trailering because they tend to flop in the wind. And so the side decks of this trimaran are made out of plywood, and the panels of plywood slide into notches pre-prepared in the crossbeams, so that the tenting platform is 8 feet square, but the main cockpit interrupts it right in the middle, so you can sit on the platform, on the side deck platform, and put your feet down into the hull, down to the cockpit sole, which means that you're not squatting on a trampoline. And the platform is intended to receive an ordinary tent, an ordinary camping tent with a floor plan of something just less than 8 feet square. They're endemic, they're easy to buy, they're cheap. And if the cockpit, if the perimeter of the cockpit is lined with a coaming that has a lip on it, and the plans will include instructions for building that coaming, it would be possible to cut a hole in the floor of the tent and fit that hole with a drawstring that would fit around the cockpit coaming, so that when the tent is erected, the cockpit is open and one can get out the galley box and the camp stove and prepare a meal in the tent, even if it's raining or even if it's very hot or very buggy. You can have shelter in this tent for living aboard like a camper. You're not sleeping on the ground. And one can use air mattresses or camping mats on the side. And when the tent is taken down, which is pretty easy to do with these pop tents, these dome tents, when the tent is down and stowed, it can be put into its own dry bag, as can all the bedding and all the other camping gear can go into dry bags and be easily lashed onto the platform, so that serious expeditions can be made in this boat. The after cockpit is intended to receive an armchair, a camper chair, or the seat out of a sports car to make it very comfortable. And one can steer from back there. It's a great place to steer from. You've got the whole boat strung out in front of you. And then if you're sailing or camping on your own, then the main cockpit can be filled up with all of the camping gear. You don't have to lash it down on the side decks. If you want to steer from the forward cockpit, which is also quite a kick, then the after cockpit is available for storage. It would take a large cooler. And then the possibility of arranging steering from both cockpits is ideal for sail training. The instructor can sit in the after cockpit and the student in the forward cockpit, and the student has the opportunity to receive instructions by feel. That is, he or she can actually feel what the instructor is doing with the foot pedals. And then the tending of the sheets is done with both hands. That's the remarkable thing about this sit-down, sit-in steering, is that you have both hands free for controlling the sheets, And you can also, you know, fix a sandwich or take a picture or put on your jacket or grab the binoculars and still have the boat under control, steering with the feet. It's a wonderful new ergonomic for sailing. And it's turned out to be really quite popular in the wind riders. And going back to the John Marple's design Sea Clipper 10, which is a marvelous little boat that's really the baby sister of the 20. Because this boat has not yet been built, all of these statements come with the proviso that there's bound to be some proof of concept work involved with the first vessel or the first few vessels even. And yet we expect them to be very popular because of this folding geometry. The folding mechanism of trimarans has a long story behind it, but the swing wing possibility is ideal here because when the float is folded in, it actually swings in underneath the tent platform, and the tent platform is undisturbed at a total beam of 8'6", so that the boat is legal for trailering even with the tent up. Or with the tent up in the campground, it's not so sprawling. You don't take up two campsites. You don't take up a lot of space in a dry sailing storage yard. You can fold the boat so that it doesn't take up any more room than a monohull. And also, it's capable of being berthed. You can actually fold this vessel while it lies afloat. As you're coming into the harbor, if you can arrange for a berth that is intended for a monohull, you can fold in either one or both of the floats while the vessel lies afloat. And while the mast is up, the mast can stay up during the folding operation. And yet, when the mast is taken down and fitted into the crutches, there'd be holes at either end of the boat for receiving mast crutches that would elevate the mast above the boat high enough so that you could stand up underneath the ridgepole. Using the mast as a ridgepole, you could stand up underneath it if you were standing in the cockpit. And this makes it possible to set up a grand tent over the whole boat in the berth to keep the sun off and have plenty of ventilation. It would not be adequate protection from bugs, and perhaps not from driving rain, but most of the time you could use as a tent the same cover that's used for protecting the boat while in storage, just a cheap tarp of 12 by 20 feet or something, hardware store variety tarp. And also, of course, when the thing is folded and the mast is down on deck, it can be stored alongside the garage or alongside your motorhome or whatever else storage place you can find for it in your friend's backyard or wherever, to reduce the costs and complications of boat ownership. Let me emphasize that this boat is designed for kit construction. It would be very easy to chop out the parts for many kits for this boat without even resorting to computer numerically controlled routers and such. All of the parts for this boat could be chopped out using templates with a skill saw. With a stack of plywood about 6 layers thick, times 1/4 inch each, one could tack the templates on top of the stack and run around the templates with a skill saw and cut out 6 boats at a time. And the advantage to the individual builder of a kit is really quite considerable. That is, you can buy a kit for about the same price that it would cost you to go out and buy the materials. And still, because of purchasing power, the kit builder can turn a coin on the project. And at 20 feet long, the boat is intended for construction in a normal double garage. The three hulls can be built separately and the crossbeams separately, and the boat even moved outside for assembly. And let's not overlook one last great advantage to a trailerable boat. Boy, the thing will go 50 knots dead to windward down the highway and take you to waters that are otherwise inaccessible if you have a boat that has to be kept in a marina and moved on its own bottom from one locale to another. Very few of us these days can get our affairs in order to take off for months or years in order to do that kind of cruising. Okay, it's Jim Brown at Hick Neck, Virginia, early November 2009. Let's see what happens in 2010 with the Sea Clipper 20. Bye-bye.